I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. We are a teach show and not a talk show, and I am so pleased to be on the Liberty First Brigade, bringing liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality and politicians. We're going to have a little historical truth today, a little lesson in history. Because you see, Obama's administration says, don't worry, we are not at war with Islam, and ISIS is not Islamic. Right? So don't worry. We don't need to worry about this. ISIS is not Islamic. They are not Islamic extremists because they are not Islamic, and we are not at war with Islam. The interesting thing is Italy has a completely different perspective. Italy is actually preparing for war with ISIS. It's amazing that ISIS is not Islamic, considering ISIS is Islamic State. Right? How do we tolerate this level of it's not even ignorance. I mean, the administration knows exactly who these people are. But we are supposed to be fooled by this because that's what they say. We're supposed to just believe what the government says. As the Islamic State gains strength in Libya, it threatens to literally overrun Italy with immigrants. And Italy is exposed, they say, with no way to handle the onslaught. Italian Defense Minister Roberta Pinotti has said that the Libya situation is out of control and they are preparing for war. Not America, though. We're not being overrun by ISIS. Well, of course not. We have no idea how overrun we've become because, you see, we're not allowed to know who's crossing the borders. These borders are like sieves, and we have illegal immigrant problems. And while we're distracted by the idea that these illegal immigrants are from Mexico, we have no idea how many of these Islamic State extremists are coming over the border. But we don't need to worry about that because they're not extremists, right? They get invitations to the White House. So of course they're not extremists. So Obama is having this counter-violent extremism summit. And the Islamic Society of Boston's Cambridge Mosque, the Radical Muslim Brotherhood Front Group, attended by the Boston Marathon bombers, was invited to join the summit and is represented by its executive director. Well, this is a countering violent extremism summit, so I imagine if you're going to be countering violent extremism, it would be better to invite violent extremists so they can give us some tips on how to counter them, right? Maybe that's the whole idea. But they're not violent extremists. They just blow up people. Interesting, isn't it? Well, we don't have to worry about that because these aren't violent extremist people, and we are not actually at war with anybody. Now, that should be a relief to us if we're really not at war with violent extremists, because that means that this global war on terror is over, right? How do you keep up with all the lies? How do you keep up with all the deceits? I don't know. It just seems crazy to me. So let's go through a little bit of history. Can we go through a little bit of history real quick? We need to know what happened in our history. This is not our first go-round with Muslim extremists. Around 1800, 1801, the year Thomas Jefferson was sworn in as president, 20% of our federal income went towards paying bribes and extortions to the Barbary states, which were the Muslim states of Tripoli and others. Now look, this is where the term Barbary pirates come from. The Barbary pirates were traveling the seas, kidnapping women and men, making them slaves, and chopping off their heads. Remember, this whole beheading thing is the signature of Islamic extremism. It is the jihad to remove people's heads. And this is not new. We had been doing this for some time. Now, Thomas Jefferson thought this was appalling. Now, it had started about 15 years earlier, around 1785, when these Algerian pirates captured a bunch of merchant ships, which were no longer being protected by the British, and then asked for $60,000. Jefferson argued in Congress that this was a bad idea. But Congress decided, around 1785, that they would pay the ransom and would continue paying the ransom to the four Muslim states for years. In fact, in 1787, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams met with Tripoli's ambassadors to Great Britain and asked why they felt they could enslave American citizens and why the Muslims held such hostilities towards America. Jefferson said to these representatives, we are not at war with you. Why are you fighting us? And Jefferson wrote a letter to John Jay and said, quote, the ambassadors answered us that it was founded on the laws of their prophet, that it was written in their Quran, that all nations who should not have acknowledged their authorities were sinners, that it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all they could take as prisoners, and that every Muslim who should be slain in battle was sure to go to heaven. And there you have it. All the way back in our history, dealing. ISIS is nothing new. ISIS is just the extension of the Barbary pirates. Well, Jefferson met with these people. And he said that we can't do this anymore. We cannot pay this ransom. This is not who we are. Jefferson was a proponent of freedom of religion. He was conflicted about the fact that this was based on religion and we didn't want to be fighting with people based on a religious beliefs. But you see, even Jefferson came to the ultimate conclusion that you cannot use religion as an excuse to kidnap, murder, rape, pillage, and plunder. Jefferson was sworn in as president. The Pasha of Tripoli demanded an immediate payment of $225,000 plus $25,000 a year, every year. And Jefferson was the first president to let the Pasha know he was not going to pay anymore. Tripoli then tore down the flagpole at the American consulate and declared war on the United States. And Jefferson sent in the Marines. We fought a four-year war, which resulted in the Marines, you know, their song, The Shores of Tripoli. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. That's where we get this. Because of the battle that we that the Marines won for America on the shores of Tripoli. And the interesting legend fact, who knows? You know, we have to dilute these things so we can't actually know the truth. But you see, the Marines throughout British history had these leather collars that they wore over the back of their necks. Some people say that the leather collars were a disciplinary tool to teach the Marines to stand straight and tall with straight necks. Well, regardless of the purpose, the original purpose of these leather bands that went around their necks, the Marines wore this in this battle against the Muslims in Tripoli to keep the Muslims from slicing off their heads. They wore leather collars around their necks to keep from becoming beheaded like an armor. And that's why they say Marines are called leather necks. And you see, we have actually been through this scenario before. We've had a president who refused to pay tribute to the Muslim terrorists and said no more. They declared war on us, and we responded in our common defense. But now we have a president who will continue to pay tribute to these Muslim extremists. Why, would you ask? Not because he's a coward, but because he is one of them. Why would you declare war on your own people?
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I don't know how much more evidence we need to show that this man who occupies our White House is not fit to be in commander of in chief of our Navy and military forces. And I don't know how much more we need to prove the entire reason why our framers insisted on having the office of the president occupied by a natural-born citizen. The whole reason that we are required by Constitution to have a natural-born citizen in the office of the president was because the office of the president is the commander-in-chief over the Navy and the military. And they did not want someone, a foreign someone, to have that kind of power. For two reasons, or many reasons, right? Number one, so you wouldn't use the military against our people in favor of whomever's foreign nation you came from. And the other, maybe not so obvious reason, the one that we're actually living today, so that you will not refuse to defend the Union if your foreign nation is attacking us? And we are living the entire reason for the natural born citizen requirement. And instead of actually standing up and declaring this to be so, we have people in government who want to say, well, Obama, obviously we didn't apply the natural born citizen requirement to Obama, so that means it doesn't apply to our candidate either. And so we get candidates that are not natural born citizens, because I guess we're just going to simply go along with this new trend in spite of the fact that the very reason for requiring natural born citizen status is being played out right in front of our faces. President Barack Obama hosts an extremism summit, refuses to identify Islamic terror as the primary threat, refuses to acknowledge ISIS or ISIL as Islamic, even though when the acronym itself, the first letter stands for Islamic. And we have the media supporting all of this, the mainstream media, because the president is now, bought out the media as well. This is why you cannot have someone who is not a natural born citizen in the House of the President, because his loyalty is not with the Union. His loyalty is not for the common welfare of the Union. His loyalty is not with the common defense of the Union. His loyalty is with his foreign alliance. And I just, there are moments, I know I'm not supposed to have moments of silence on the radio, that's a very bad thing, but there are moments where I just simply am speechless because of the fact that we know this about him. And the checks and balances that are supposed to be in place to protect us if we were to ever make this mistake, as if we didn't know who he was when we elected him. Books told us exactly who he was. His own biography told us exactly who he was. And yet, we still cannot admit that the man is a Muslim extremist. We have his pastor going over to Egypt proclaiming that our president is a Muslim extremist loyalist, bragging about it, not condemning it for him, bragging about it. And what we have here now is a Congress who refuses to engage in the proper checks and balances. Now that we have identified the man who is occupying the White House as someone who is contrary to every principle established to make us a union and a republic, and they do nothing. And some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, cause she filled me with love and the strength to live. She said,
the Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Let's be very careful now about what we do in 2016. The presidential election, declaring ourselves a new president. We need to be very careful about this. We need to be finding a president who understands that he is in submission to the people, in submission to the states, in submission to Congress. We need a president who will submit to his proper station in the constitutional scheme of things. We need a president who will not continue to engage in executive orders in the name of safety over liberty. We need a president who is willing to shut down the borders and start dealing with this terrorism creeping over our borders. Our open borders are not about the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. That is not our threat. The threat over our borders is all these people coming in from Syria, from Lebanon, from Yemen, from all of these now run Islamic states. That's where our threat is. It's the same threat as the Barbary Pirates. We have the Barbary Pirates again. And we need a president who is simply going to shut down the borders and say, we will no longer pay tribute to you. You will no longer pass freely through our borders. We will no longer fund you and give you arms. We just simply need to cut off at this point. And this is not being an isolationist, okay? We need to cut off the American sale of arms to the Middle East, period. We need to be tired of creating our own enemies. I'll remind you what Hillary Clinton said in an interview about how we created the Taliban.
If you think if we walked away from this, didn't give them money today, it would be worse for us from a security standpoint.
I do. We're building a relationship that just did not exist. I said in our last trip when you were with me that we had a huge trust deficit, in part because the United States had, to be fair, we had helped to create the problem we're now fighting.
How?
Because when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, we had this brilliant idea that we were going to come to Pakistan and create a force of Mujahideen, equip them with Stinger missiles and everything else, to go after the Soviets inside Afghanistan. And we were successful. The Soviets left Afghanistan, and then we said, great, goodbye, leaving these trained people who were fanatical in Afghanistan and Pakistan, leaving them well-armed, creating a mess, frankly, that at the time we didn't really recognize. We were just so happy to see the Soviet Union fall, and we thought, okay, fine, we're okay now. Everything's going to be so much better. Now you look back, the people we're fighting today, we were supporting in the fight against the Soviets.
And there you have it. And she says, now we can't back out. We can't stop paying them because we created this mess. Do you see the historical application? We continue to pay the Barbary Pirates because we armed them in the first place. And now we created the enemy through these, what she called them, Stinger missiles and all these things that we're sending over there. And now we can't stop paying them, she says, because it will be even worse for us if we refuse to pay the Barbary Pirates. And so for how long now have we been paying tribute to these Islamic extremists? How long have we been supporting them in their battles? You know, we went through all of this crisis in Egypt where we had to help one side win over the other to create a new democracy in Egypt. How's that working out for us now? Creating a democracy instead of a republic in which the majority of the population is Muslim Brotherhood, and now who is ruling and reigning over Egypt? Stop paying the Barbary Pirates. Stop arming them. I mean, we're actually doing worse than we did in the late 1700s, early 1800s. We're doing worse. We're not just simply paying them anymore. We're paying them and arming them. And you heard it from Hillary. If you get her for president, that's what you're going to get. Someone who believes that we should just keep paying the Barbary pirates. But, you know, you're not going to get anything better if you vote for Jeb Bush. Because Jeb Bush is not for shutting down our borders. He's all for this amnesty. You know, the more I read about Jeb Bush, and the more that I hear what he has to say, I have talked, you know, I'm from Florida, and that's where Jeb Bush is, and I have talked with lots of people who know him personally now. And I am not so convinced that Jeb Bush is fully informed on everything that he takes a position on. I'm becoming more and more convinced that Jeb Bush is just a simple puppet. His whole stand for Common Core is based on total ignorance. His whole stand on immigration is based on ignorance. I've heard the people who have personally spoken to Jeb Bush about these things, and he's simply naive and utopian about the whole thing. And so this is a very dangerous position to take when you want to be commander-in-chief over the military. Who else is our favorite here, right? Marco Rubio? Well, he's not a natural-born citizen. And I suppose if we're going to just simply eliminate this requirement of natural-born citizen, in spite of what we're seeing right now, because we have ignored the requirement of a natural-born citizen, then you have many other issues to deal with. Marco Rubio is now backing down on controlling the president's executive, ending the president's executive amnesty, because he doesn't want to shut down the Department of Homeland Security. Do you know 75% of the Department of Homeland Security is classified as essential personnel? Do you know what that means? That means that 75% of the DHS or more, even if the funding lapses, will not stop doing their job. This whole thing is just nothing but a scare tactic. It's another crisis to keep us distracted about what's really going on. The fact that they want to fund the Department of Homeland Security and amnesty at the same time. And now Marco Rubio is supporting the entire Barnum and Bailey circus story. Because, you see, there's a fool created every minute. He doesn't support shutting down the Department of Homeland Security, he says. The result will be a DHS shutdown, which will be harmful to our national security. The answer is not for Republicans to surrender and pass a clean funding bill. The answer is for the president and the Democrats to abandon the executive order and cooperate in passing a series of immigration bills that deal with real border security. Really? Why do we need to pass more legislation to do what we are supposed to be doing by law already? I don't understand this. The president is threatening to veto funding. Article 1, Section 7 doesn't give him the power to veto that. The power rests in the House alone. Rubio says, national security is too important to hold up funding. Although he disagrees with Obama's move to go around Congress to halt the deportations of 5 million undocumented. Rubio says, we have to fund Homeland Security. We cannot let Homeland Security shut down. And that's the big lie. Because it will not shut down. They've classified them as essential personnel. They will not shut down. And the non-essential personnel will simply get a paid vacation. Because you cannot believe, in your wildest of dreams, that even if we get beyond the February 27th deadline, that the Department of Homeland Security's funding will cease permanently. You cannot believe that. There's absolutely nothing in history that proves that. There is absolutely everything in history that proves the contrary. And so what will happen is these essential personnel will keep doing their jobs, and they will be paid eventually, and all the non-essential personnels will be put on paid leave. They will simply get a vacation in which they will get a check, a very large check, at the end of their vacation. I want us to understand the truth in all of this. We are not going to fix Washington, D.C. through Washington, D.C. It is an impossibility. We need to turn off the channel. Shut down the hype. And start focusing on getting control of our states and our local governments. Because you see, this federal government has abdicated the use of its only power to secure the security of the Union. And since they have decided not to use the power that's been delegated to them, it is now up to the states to serve the people.
The Chris Ann Hall
and
Show.
Secure liberty's the borders.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
The powers not delegated to the United States are reserved to the states and to the people. You can't get much clearer than that. The word delegated means that that power that has been delegated is a temporary transfer of power to do a job for the agent. The delegated power comes from the states. The states are the delegators, and the United States, the central government, is the delegate. And when the delegate refuses to use the power for the purpose that has been delegated, then it is up to the delegator to take back that power and use it for its intended purpose. That means that the delegator has the power to hire someone new to do the job when the old employee refuses, or to simply do the job themselves until they can find someone else to do it. It's the same. It's just a simple principle of proper management. If you are the manager of a Chick-fil-A restaurant and you have hired an employee to make the fries and you have hired an employee to make the chicken and the lemonade and the milkshakes, and one day your fry guy comes in and says, "I don't feel like making fries today. I am not making fries." Is the owner of that restaurant going to have to hang a sign on the door and says, "My employee refuses to make fries today, so I regret to inform you that we will have no fries"? There are fries in the restaurant. The employee just refuses to make it. So now the owner has to hang a sign on the window and says, "My employee refuses to do his job, and so we will not have fries today." Is that how that would work? No, it's not. The business owner would look at the fry guy and say, "Don't make fries, fine. Walk out the door. You are fired." And he will make the fries himself if he doesn't have time to hire someone new. So what happens if the Fry guy comes in? We're in a brand new scenario now. The Fry guy comes in and tells the business owner, I am not making fries for you today. I'm going to make chicken instead. Now, he was never delegated the authority to make chicken. He was only delegated the authority to make fries. Can he then kick the chicken guy off the grill and make chicken? Absolutely not. He doesn't have the authority to do that. He was only delegated the authority to make fries. And so the business manager now has to hang a sign on the door and says, my fry guy refuses to make fries and he's going to be cooking chicken. So today we will have no fries and our chicken will be improperly cooked. Is that what has to happen? No. The business owner will say to the fry guy, get back to making fries. Pick the chicken guy up off the floor, put him on the grill, and say, you make chicken. That's what I hired you for, to make chicken. And so now what happens? You see, it's the owner's responsibility to take control of the employees. And we have delegated certain power to our employee, the central government. Madison tells us in Federalist 45, the powers delegated to the federal government are war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. He said, and taxation will be limited to those four powers. Well, now we have a federal government that's looking at the states and saying, look, we're not going to make fries for you today. We are not going to secure your border. And the states are hanging up signs on the window that says, our fry guy won't make fries, so guess what? Our borders will not be secure today. When in reality, the state should be standing up and firing the central government and saying, fine, we will secure our own borders because we did not surrender that power. We simply delegated it temporarily. Your refusal means we will do it ourselves. God bless. See you tomorrow.